Hey, Roy, let us in on some of that good music, man. Let's mug around. Somebody give me an A.
Say, Large T, don't you think that A is a trifle flat?
Well, that's close enough for mugging. It makes us six men sound like 60. So let's all mug around. I's a muggin', boom. We's a muggin', bang. I's a muggin', boom. Bebop, 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 bebop. I's a muggin', boom. We's a muggin', bang. I's a muggin', boom. Bebop, 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 bebop. Nobody knows just how it started. Somebody blew it through a horn. Somebody played it on a fiddle. But somebody sang it and the song was born. Now it's the craze, the new sensation. Now it's the song the bands all swing. Now it's the phrase, rocks a nation. Don't try to stop me cause I'm gonna sing. I's a muggin', boom. We's a muggin', bang. I's a muggin', boom.
Now, Big T, that we is all familiar with the melody, how about mugging on the trombone?
I'm gonna tell you all about the numbers. You just follow me over to the other side and I'll tell you all about them.
Well, come on, Jackson. Tell me all about the numbers now.
All right. Can you count?
Sure can.
Let me hear you.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Oh, no. Don't say 7. Say, all I have to tell you about this. Beginning at 1, start counting upwards. When you reach 7, say, When you reach 10, say, woof.
Woof.
When you reach any number containing a 7, or any number into which 7 can be divided, say, And when you reach 20, 30, or any number up to 70 that ends with a 0, say, woof, woof.
Woof, woof.
Think you can do that?
Sure can.
All right, let's go.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, woof. 11, 12, 13, 15, 16.
61, 62, 64, 65.
66, 68, 69, whoa, whoa. I'm 1, I'm 2, I'm 3, I'm 4, I'm 5, I'm 6, I'm 8, I'm 9, whoa, whoa.
I's a muggin', boom.
La-di-a-da.
We's a muggin', bang.
La-di-a-da.
I's a muggin', boom.
La-di-a-da.
Up, 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 up. Boom. Bang. Boom. That's a muggin'.
From the city by the Golden Gate, this is KSSR-DB San Francisco, Swing Street Radio.
Where the big bands swing.
It's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for yet another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy crime classics with the death of a picture hanger, Jesse James. But first, on the lighter side, it's the Charlie McCarthy Show. Charlie McCarthy's program was the first major variety hour to use ventriloquism on the air. Edgar Bergen was born in Chicago in 1903. One day in school, Bergen sketched a face that would launch 1,000 radio shows. He patterned Charlie's features after a kid who sold newspapers in the neighborhood. Later, he paid $35 to a carpenter named Theodore Mack, and the rest is radio history. Edgar Bergen and his dummy Charlie McCarthy were first heard on radio on Rudy Valley's Royal Jonathan Hour. That was in December of 1936. Charlie was sensational. They were so popular with Valley's huge audience, they were brought back again and again. Chase and Sanborn finally decided to cash in on the act's sudden fame, bankrolling Bergen to his own show in 1937. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, along with special guest stars Judy Garland and Abbott and Costello, from June of 1942. Another classic program from the radio vaults of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen, Sally Folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jameis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Edgar Bergen, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, Ray Noble and his orchestra, our guest, the star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Me and My Gal, Judy Garland, and Charlie McCarthy.
Hello, Judy, me darling, darling.
Hello, Charlie, what's cooking?
Coffee. You want a mug?
Say, Charlie, do you know why a moth eats a hole in the rug?
No. Why does a moth eat a hole in a rug?
To see the floor show. Oh!
Say, Judy, how are you doing with this scrap rubber drive? You know, there's a great surplus of
rather shortage, you
yes,
know.
Yes, yes. Yes, I've been turning in lots of it.
Good.
You know the saying, collect the rubber and beat Schickel Gruber.
Yeah. Yeah, anything that snaps means slaps for the jack. Say, Mr. Noble, what have you given, huh?
Well, I'm thinking of contributing a tired masseur down at my Turkish bath.
A tired masseur at your Turkish bath?
Yes. Worn out rubber. Jolly good, I thought.
Yes, well, I'll tell you what you can do, Mr. Noble. I'll go out and dig up some more of this scrap, and you and have that rubber band of yours play extra snappy while Judy sings, I never knew I could love anybody, honey, like I'm loving you.
I've been running in circles while playing the game of pretending. I never realized I wasn't wise what love could do. Now I'm facing a future that hasn't that one happy ending. And I'm a fool, I guess, to confess it all to you. I never knew I could love anybody, honey, like I'm loving you. I didn't realize what a pair of eyes and a baby smile could do. I can't sleep, I can't eat, I never knew a single soul could be so sweet. Oh, I never knew I could love anybody, honey, like I'm loving you. I can't sleep and I can't eat. I never knew a single soul could be so sweet. Oh, I never knew I could love anybody, honey, like I'm loving you.
Charlie, how did you do? Did you get any rubber?
Yeah, I dug up an old potholder of Bergen's.
A potholder?
Yeah, you know, his reducing girdle. Hey, let's you and me get in Bergen's Stanley steamer and haul that stuff over to the gas station. What do you say?
Okay, Charlie, that'll be fun.
Sure it will.
Just a minute, young man.
Hello, Bertie.
You're not taking my Stanley steamer anywhere.
No.
No. I'm going to use it myself tonight.
Well, see you later, Charlie.
Yeah, well, it's nice of you to stick with me.
Well, young man?
If you're going to use it, Bergen, you better give us time to take out the dishes and the clams first.
Dishes and clams?
Yes, sir.
What are you talking about?
Well, you see, Skinny Dugan and me have been taking that old car of yours down to the beach at Santa Monica.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, what for?
Well, it's very good for... Now, don't get mad.
No, no.
But you will.
No, what is it?
Well, I'll tell you.
Yes.
It's very good for steaming clams.
Steaming clams? What do you mean?
Your Stanley steamer is now McCarthy and Dugan's planetaria.
It's what?
It's an auto grotto.
All right.
We specialize in the clam with am.
I see. And where do you get these clams?
We dig them.
You dig them?
Yes.
Dig them?
Yes. Dig, dig, dig. Well, all right, yeah.
I see. Well, that's not very easy work, is it?
No, sir, it ain't. They're very sly, those little tricky things,
yes.
Those little sand squatters.
Where do you find, how do you find where they're buried, Charlie?
Well, you see, Skinny and me, we sort of sneak up on them.
I see.
And when we see one, we make a noise like a lady clam.
Lady clam?
Yeah. And when the clams come up to see what's cooking, they are.
I see. Well, who does the cooking, you or Skinny?
Pierre.
Oh, Pierre.
Yes, he's our cook. French cook, you know.
I see.
You must taste his barbecue soup here. Oh, and his grunions with onion. Oh, non gratis. Oh, I see. Oh, nothing.
Yes, well, I'd like to meet him.
He's waiting outside. He's in the cooker now.
I see.
I'll get him. Oh, Pierre. He's very temperamental.
Yes, I know.
Oh, Pierre Lesnar. I'll get him. Yes. Oh, Pierre.
Mortimer, so you're Pierre Lesnar, are you?
Yeah.
A Frenchman.
Oh, sure. Bondor, monsieur. Bondor.
Bondor.
Yeah.
Bondor.
Yeah, I see.
Regular Frenchman.
Yeah. What? I mean, oui. Yes.
Parlez-vous français?
Oui, was,
I said, parlez-vous français?
No, there you go. You're always clowning, you and your Swedish accent.
No, I say, what I mean, I understand you're a very good cook.
Yeah, very good, very good. Yeah, I'm quite notorious. Is that so? I guess you've heard of Oscar of the Waldorf.
Yes, I've heard of Oscar of the Waldorf.
Well, I'm Mort of the Fishwarp.
Well, that's good, yeah. Now, tell me, I'm rather interested, Mortimer. Tell me about the various things down there. How was your cuisine?
There was about five of us there.
I did. Your cuisine.
Oh, well, the only relative I got is Grandpa.
Yes, I know. Well, I was speaking of your food.
Oh, yeah.
What's the nicest dish you served?
Mm?
The nicest dish you served.
Oh, the nicest dish. Well, there's several. Yeah. The other day, a tall blonde in a bathing suit.
No.
She was mighty pretty.
No, I mean, what's on your menu?
Hmm?
Your menu.
No.
Yes.
No, I wouldn't say that.
No, I mean, you must have a menu.
I must, huh?
Yes, a bill of fare. A bill of fare.
Yeah.
What do you have on your bill of fare?
We don't use them.
Oh, you don't use them?
I just let the customers look at my apron. It tells the story. I
We present two pictures, before and after. The first is a home at breakfast time. The persons, Mr. and Mrs.
Where's my hat?
Aren't you going to finish your coffee?
No time. So long. See you tonight.
Well, that isn't very much like the first few months we were married. I wonder what's the matter.
That was before. Now, same scene, same people a few days after.
That coffee smells good.
Just wait until you taste it.
Can't wait. Sorry, going to taste it right now.
Oh, don't burn yourself.
I won't. Boy, that's good. Just like downtown.
Like it?
Like it. But there's flavor enough in that cup to make four of the old kind. It must be Chase and Sanborn.
It is. A man's coffee.
Lady, you come here to me.
What? Why? What have I done?
Let's hear you say prunes.
Prunes.
Once more.
Prunes.
Did you get your Chase and Sanborn kiss this morning? If you didn't, get one tomorrow.
I used to be a bugler.
You did? My goodness. Look, come here. Costello, what's all this hey-hey stuff?
Well, me and my wife just bought a farm. Hey-hey!
Now, wait a minute. Just a minute, Costello. You bought a farm?
Yep.
Who did you buy it from?
Well, I bought it from a real estate man.
Do tell.
And he got fresh with my wife.
What do you mean?
He said he liked to get her alone.
Well, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Nobody's going to get my wife alone.
No. He meant he wanted to get her alone in the bank.
What do I care? Alone in the bank, alone in the car. What's the difference? She's my wife.
He just wanted your wife to sign a lease.
Sign a lease?
Mm-hmm.
Abbott, what kind of English is that?
What's wrong with that?
You mean sign a line?
No. A lien is a mortgage. Now, didn't you have to go through escrow?
I didn't go through escrow, pigeons.
No. When you got your farm, did you go through escrow?
No, I went through Burbank and Glendale.
You're a fine one to buy a farm.
How much did you pay down?
Well, the guy wanted $50,
yes.
Then he came down to 40,
yes.
Agreed to take 30, so I gave him 10.
Well,
that's the way I do business. No chiseling.
I don't see why you wanted a farm anyway. You don't like farm life.
Yes, I do, Adam.
No, you don't.
I think it's wonderful to lie under a tree on a hot day and let a cow kiss you to sleep.
A cow kiss you?
Sure.
That's sanitary.
No, but it sure cools you up.
No. By the way, what kind of a cow have you? A heifer cow?
I beg your pardon?
I say, what kind of a cow have you? A heifer cow?
A heifer cow?
Mm-hmm.
I got a whole flock of cows.
No, you don't understand. Not flock. Herd.
Herd what?
Herd of cows.
Sure, I heard a cow. Damn,
no, I mean a cow herd.
What if I care for cow herd? I
didn't
say not to be a
kid. All right.
About cows.
I'm not in the mood.
You're not in what mood?
A cow mood.
Who cares if the cow mood?
No, no, it's all set. You don't know how to milk a cow.
Who don't?
You don't.
One time I milked 1,000 cows with my left hand.
Why did you just milk with your left hand?
That's my old cow hand.
Oh. what else have you got on your farm? Have you any bees?
Bees?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I've got a whole herd of bees.
Now, there you go again. It isn't herd of bees. It's swarm.
What?
It's swarm.
How do you take your cover?
No, no, God. Silly answers. How much honey does your bees give?
They don't give any, but I'm satisfied.
You're satisfied?
Mm-hmm.
What good are bees if they don't give honey?
They sting my mother-in-law.
Oh. I'd like to see that farm of yours.
All right. I got a picture of the place. Here.
Let me see.
See those two houses?
Mm-hmm.
One is the barn, the other one is my house.
Which one is the house?
The one with the horse looking out through the window.
Your farmhouse can't be fit to live in with a horse in it.
I have to take good care of that horse.
What do you mean?
He's a race horse.
What's that got to do with it?
Me and Charlie McCarty bought it. He owns half and I own half.
Which half does Charlie own?
The half that gets the oats.
What do you mean?
I don't want to talk about my half.
Why not?
It's a long tail.
All right, forget it. Charlie.
I don't get it either.
If Charlie's going to beat the horse, then he'll have to buy the horse's fodder.
Why should he buy the horse's fodder? We've got one horse already.
No, you don't understand. Charlie puts the horse's fodder in a bag and hangs it on your horse's nose.
Now, ain't our horse going to look funny with his fodder hanging on his nose?
No, your horse eats his fodder.
Well, we got a cannibal.
No, strictly not.
Well, what does the horse's father eat?
He eats his father.
What do you know?
Yeah.
And what does the horse's mother eat?
She eats her father.
It's getting worse all the time.
If Charlie feeds the horse, what do you do?
I keep the horse clean.
Oh, you're the horse's groom.
Now, ain't that something? Now the guy's got me married to the horse.
You curry the horse.
I curry him.
Mm-hmm.
He's big enough to walk himself. He's got to walk. I mean, after all, we're going to run him in a big race at Callahenty.
Callahenty. In other words, you're going to run him in a derby.
No, he don't look good in the derby. We can't get over
here. No. I'm trying to find out about your horse. Is he a mutter?
How can he be a mutter? Ain't a she always a mutter?
Certainly not. Sometimes he makes a better mutter than a she.
Abbott, suppose a mama horse has little horses. Don't that make her a mutter?
Well, now, that depends on her feet.
My horse's feet are okay. Outside of, he limps a little with his front leg.
Oh, I see. He's having trouble with his forelegs.
No, I just said he only limps on his two front legs.
Well, Costelli, your horse's forelegs are in front.
What are those things in back?
Understand, your horse has four legs in front and hind legs in back.
Four legs in front and hind legs in back. What I got? A centipede? Now, Abbott, don't try to tell you about my horse. I know more about it than you do. I got him right there in the house.
Now, wait a minute. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Your wife worked hard to help you buy this little farm, and now that she has her home of her own, you deliberately inconvenience her by letting her sleep in the house with a horse.
Oh, the horse is clean.
Never mind that. Well, I'm sorry. Now, you should be. You got a nice big stable in the backyard, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
You have a nice clean stall with plenty of fresh straw on the floor?
Yes, sir.
Well, what's wrong with you?
I don't know.
Well, take a tumble yourself.
I'm sorry I'm doing all those things.
Well, what's wrong? What is
I didn't realize what I was doing.
Well, certainly.
I just loved the horse, that was all.
Well, you shouldn't do it.
After all, it was a nice clean stall with plenty of fresh straw on the floor.
You've got plenty of it out there.
And it's a nice, big, clean stable.
Certainly it is.
I'll fix the whole thing up.
What are you going to do?
I let my wife sleep in the stable.
No.
If there's music in your heart and you have an urge to get up and dance, it may be because today is the first day of summer. Or then again, it may be Jerome Kern's Smoke It In Your Eyes, a la Ray Noble.
there's something I want to talk to you about.
What is it, Charlie?
Well, aren't you going to congratulate me?
Why? Well, is it your birthday?
No, silly. It's Father's Day.
Well, I know it is, but what's that got to do with you?
Well, ain't I your sweet daddy?
Charlie, you're impossible.
Oh, no.
But say, did you buy Mr. Bergen a Father's Day present?
Well, I was. You see, there was. No.
Oh, Charlie, you're very, very thoughtless.
Dolus is the word. Dolus, yeah.
Listen, Charlie, who was it who always cheered you up when things looked dark?
Well, that was Bergen, did it?
And who was it who always nursed you when you were sick?
Well, that was Bergen.
And who always loaned you money when you were broke?
Well, I don't know. I never met the man yet. Don't Jesus does.
Well, I still think you should have gotten him something.
Oh, so there you are, children.
Don't think anything about you, son, you know.
No.
He doesn't know.
All right.
Climb upon my knee, sonny boy. Though you're only 12, sonny boy.
You do it right in front of Julie, don't you?
Uh-oh. Hello, son.
I get it. Yeah. Hello, Bergen.
Wonderful day, isn't it, Judy?
Wonderful.
Yes, it certainly is, Mr. Bergen.
If it doesn't rain, it is.
Marvelous thing, fatherhood. Nothing like it. There's nothing more tender than the relationship between father and son.
You're right, Mr. Bergen. Why, do you realize that 50% of the parents are fathers?
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, that's practically half, isn't it?
Well, son?
Yes?
I don't suppose you have anything special to say to me anything?
No, no, not a thing.
You,
not a thing, no.
I see.
Hasn't come, I guess. I don't know.
Well, the day isn't over yet. I guess I'll just toddle along and leave you two children alone.
He really expected something, didn't he?
Of course he did, Charlie.
Oh, the way he hinted it was rude, I thought.
If I were you, I'd go right out and buy him something.
Well, don't you think he'd be just as happy if I gave him one of those big Chase and Sanborn kisses? With me?
Well, listen, if I were you, I'd get him something to show what he's worth to you.
What he's worth to me?
Yes.
The 5 and 10 is closed today. Well, anyway, I don't know what to buy him. I don't.
Well, I think I'd get him something practical.
Yeah?
Something he can use.
Something he can use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, how about a bowl?
A bowl?
Yes, something to soak his bread in.
How about a billfold?
Oh, he doesn't fold them. He buries them. Say, do you think he'd like, clothing, huh?
Well, I've never seen him go anywhere without it.
No, that's right.
Maybe he'd like a beanie.
A beanie? I could get him a combination nutmeg grinder, pants presser, and lightning rod. How about that? That'd be good.
Or how about a pair of open-toed earmuffs with a belt in the back?
Yeah. I guess it's not so good. Maybe you didn't say it loud enough. I should have said it so they didn't hear it.
Well, let's go to the department store. Maybe we'll get an idea.
Let's run.
How much money have you got? Well, how much money have you got?
We can trade this egg in for something. And I got a cool buck in the quota. And you don't know how that stuff is to scrape it together. I just suffer and scrape and suffer.
Well, go get your piggy bank and we'll bring home the bacon.
Yeah.
Well, here's the store. Let's look around.
Maybe our man over there can help us. Are you the floral walker?
Yes, I'm the aisle pedestrian. Yeah. 4 hours, 9 to 5, 6 to 1, half a dozen of the other. And what can I do for you?
You got anything in the second?
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking for something for Father's Day for this young man.
Oh, isn't he rather small for a father?
Now listen, floral walker. We want you to show us some courtesy.
Righto, what size do you wear?
Let's see, about a 13 and a half collar with a high instep.
Tell me, do you keep stationary?
Oh, no, I move around.
No.
Well, what would you suggest that would appeal to a man about 35?
Yes.
A blonde about 21, but of course we don't...
Do you have anything snappy in garters?
Oh, no, but we have something catchy in fly paper. Shall we go?
But
I don't know.
Listen, we're not getting anywhere here. Where's the gift department?
Oh, gift department. Yeah. Right over here. And this is one of our best salesmen, Mr. Swing.
You don't say. Is it storming outside? Oh, yes, indeed. I am a salesman, and I'm a first-rate salesman, too.
Yes.
And, well, no, I'm not exactly a first-rate salesman, either, no. Because I'm more of a cut-rate salesman. And,
cut-rate.
Well, no, what I mean is I'm a very hot salesman.
You're a hot salesman. You sell hot dogs, I
No, suppose. I do not. I do not sell hot dogs.
Right.
And hot dogs are sold in the pet shop. Yes. And if you want a hot dog, why on earth did you ever come in here in the first place?
Oh.
Well, I'm beginning to wonder myself. That's a good question, I think.
And please don't finger the lingerie.
That's lingerie.
You don't say.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Go ahead and have a good time at my expense.
Enjoy it, yes.
You're just going to tease me until you get me into a snit.
A what?
Yes. And you're just trying to torment me because I'm a pretty old man.
Oh.
I'm not exactly a pretty old man either, but I'm not what you call homely.
No.
All right, you're not a homely old man. You just have an ugly disposition, that's all.
Charlie. Let's stop wasting time. Do you have any notions?
Oh, yes, I have oceans of notions. In fact, I have scads. And,
scads.
Well, no, I don't exactly have scads either.
No.
But
have you got one notion? Just one.
Yes, I have one notion. That's not to wait on you, and so I won't. I'd like to say good day, and so I'm going to. Good day.
Oh. Poor man.
We'll have a tough time to top that, won't we?
Well, listen, maybe I'd better buy this present myself, Charlie.
Uh-huh.
You know, shopping is his art. It needs a woman's touch.
How true, Judy.
Yes.
Now, here's my dollar and a quota. Y'all can take it on from here on. You hear me? Spend it all, you hear?
Well, now, let's see.
Yes.
What's this over here?
I don't know.
Oh, look, Charlie, isn't that the darlingest knitted snood?
A snood for Bergen? Are you kidding?
Not for Mr. Bergen, for me.
Yeah, but it's Father's
Day. And look, it's just a dollar and a quarter.
It's my dough, too.
I think I'll take it.
Yeah. Now I know what you mean by a woman's touch.
Be with us again next Sunday when Charlie's guests will be Walter Brennan and Jenny Thim. This is Funny Twist saying goodnight from Hollywood, the National Broadcasting Company.
From June of 1942, it's been the Charlie McCarthy Show with special guest stars Judy Garland plus Abbott and Costello. In a moment, crime classics with The Death of a Picture Hanger, Jesse James. That as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Crime Classics was a neat little series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land from every time. It came to CBS in September of 1953. The host was fictitious Thomas Highland, played by Lou Merrill, and described as a, quote, connoisseur of crime, a student of violence, and a teller of murder. The production crew was among radio's finest, including Elliot Lewis, created the show from his large personal library of crime cases. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Crime Classics and The Death of a Picture Hanger, Jesse James, from July of 1953. Another classic radio program from the archives of yesteryear.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland. I'm going to tell you another true crime story. Listen. The man is nailing a horse's picture to the wall. The horse is pawing the western skies in the classic attitude of pawing horses, and it is the top half of a calendar distributed by Isaac's Livery. It's a hot April day in St. Joseph, Missouri, in the year 1882, and the man is hanging the picture in his living room because he has a fondness for the noble beast. Horses have gotten him out of many a critical situation, such as 1, holding up railroads, 2, robbing banks, 3, murdering fellows. His name is Jesse James, and as soon as he finishes hanging that picture, a friend of his is going to shoot the back of his head off. So tonight, my transcribed report to you on the death of a picture hanger.
Crime Classics, a new series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Thomas Highland. Tonight, we take you to Jefferson City, Missouri, to the mansion of the governor of that state.
His name was Crittenden, but his cronies called him Critch. He liked living in the governor's mansion because he never had it so good. There were servants, crystal chandeliers, wine furnished by cronies, entertainments by cronies, and best of all, six small gilded cherubs, backs bent cheerfully to support a cast iron bathtub, and quite often the governor also. So if you've never attended a governor taking a bath, here's your chance.
Where's that soap? Where is it?
Oh, there it is, Critch. Right behind you.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
When's the last time you had a bath?
Kansas City. Just after the hanging of Billy Bob Williams. Let's see, that was,
March 12th, last.
What a memory you got, Governor.
Yeah, hanging outlaw is one of the nicest parts of this job, Timberlake. You ever get to be governor, hang a lot of outlaws and remember when. That way you can tell people and people will be impressed and keep you governor.
I'll remember.
Hand me that rose water and glycerin, Sheriff.
Oh, sure. Oh,
thanks. You know what I called you down here for?
Got an idea.
Tell me and I'll tell you if you're right.
Jesse James?
Look good on my record. He to die somehow soon. During my administration in my state.
People will cheer you wherever you go.
I like the sound of people cheering.
Governor.
Hand me the towel, sir.
Oh.
Thanks.
Governor, I've been thinking.
Scheming kind of thinking?
Well, you might say.
About Jesse?
If it works, people are liable to cheer you right on to Washington. Then there's no telling what.
In a case like that, you're liable to be standing right where I'm standing.
That's right.
Get Jesse for me.
I'm going to do that.
Not since Kansas City, huh, Sheriff?
Not since then.
Well, how'd you like to take a bath right now?
I didn't want to say nothing. I was hoping you'd ask.
She's all yours, Sheriff. Enjoy yourself.
Sheriff Timberlake was a man who instinctively knew his way around a bathtub. He soaked, lathered, and rinsed and was out of there in the shake of a lamb's tail. Then he went home. Then he changed his clothes. He got into a nondescript outfit of brown woolen pants and a black alpaca coat. And he went down to Kansas City. Many things were to be found in Kansas City. A wooden monument, long since burned, of Daniel Sanker, who got a message through to his beleaguered dad. A grand opera house. And three mechanical pianos, each with fiddle attached. All in all, it was a very happy community. Worthy of note is the fact that Spit in the Ocean, a poker variation, was invented at Bobrick's Poker Palace during this era. And it is into this very den that Sheriff Timberlake wandered. He wandered here because he was looking for someone. A girl. A young lady whose job it was to stand in back of strangers at the gaming tables and make signals to the houseman on the opposite side. When Timberlake approached her, she had three fingers in the air and the tip of her tongue pointing to the left.
Maddie.
Oh.
Up you, Hunter. Want to talk with you, Maddie.
A second.
Raise you.
Carl.
I got me a one-eyed jack in the hole. Gives me three of them. Where'd you say you're from? Roanoke? Nice place.
Come on. Out here. What you want?
How's Johnny?
You said you weren't going to turn him in.
For favors.
What you want him to do?
Nothing.
What you want?
Jesse James.
Oh.
Got to clean up Missouri, Maddie.
Oh?
Got to start with Jesse.
If you say it.
Yeah, Jesse's staying with Robert and Charlie Ford.
That's right.
Now, your friends, ain't they, Maddie, Robert and Charlie Ford?
I used to know him pretty good.
Ain't hard to talk to old friends, Maddie.
And you ain't going to touch Johnny, are you?
You just tell Robert and Charlie Ford I'm at Stamponi's boarding house right now. Ain't got a gun either.
That all you want me to do?
You tell them, Maddie. Yeah?
How is it?
The fort.
Door's open. Come on in, boys. Well, didn't Maddie tell you I left my guns back in Jefferson City? Just you come on in.
Bob, over there.
All right. Glad to see you back in Missouri, Charlie. Heard you and Robert were over in Kansas for a while. Heard you're in jail. Heard you killed a man to get out. Glad to see you back in Missouri.
Bob, get him.
All right. I told you I weren't holding no iron, boys.
Making sure. Take your shirt off him, Bob. Now let him go, Bob. How come you ain't holding nothing, Sheriff?
Now you know what I'm gonna say, you believe.
Go on back here, Bob, where you was before.
All right.
Sheriff, you crazy?
Let me ask you a question, then you decide. How'd you like a full pardon for what you done in Missouri, Charlie? Robert, you need never go back into Kansas. You're free to stay here as long as you live. Come and go as you please. Don't have to worry about killing four people in Missouri. Besides, have $10,000. You've been robbing, you've been stealing, you've been killing. You got $10 between you? Both of you, murderers, thieves, scum. I figured you'd do that. I'm glad you did, because now you're hating yourself.
Put your gun back, Bob. Let him run on a little bit more.
You like Jesse James, Charlie?
Ain't nothing about him I like or don't like.
You like Jesse, Robert?
Man's talking to you, Robert. Wants to know you like Jesse.
Do you?
Once Jesse and Bob had a little fight. 2 years ago, Bob was only 19 and Jesse, a full-grown man. When Jesse was finished with Bob, Bob got to be a full-grown man.
The governor wants Jesse dead or alive.
A lot of people do.
Governor says he'd give both of you a full pardon and $10,000 for Jesse.
Ain't no bargain, Jesse being who he is. Gunfighter like he is, and fast like
whoever
he...
do it, be a hero. People cheer.
That'd be nice.
What'd you say, Robert?
That'd be nice.
Ride with the governor.
That'd be nice.
Being a hero instead of a running dog.
I like that word.
Hero?
Yeah.
Robert?
Yeah?
Say it.
Hero.
What's the matter?
Listen to what I can say. $10,000.
Well, boys...
Jesse James died all of a sudden. Wouldn't take long for you to hear about it. We'd let you know.
That's a promise.
Chain reaction. Governor in bathtub. Sheriff in waiting. Matty, the girl card watcher. And the brothers Ford, Robert and Charlie. The principals involved in getting Jesse James assassinated. It would be well at this point to remark upon some of the accomplishments of Jesse James. His standard feat was murdering cowboys and rustling cattle. One incident in Starr County, Texas, had him murdering single-handedly three cowboys and driving off 500 fine head of beef, a record which stands to this day. On record, too, is his slaying by bowie knife of Mr. John W. Wicker, a Pinkerton man from Chicago. Then there were several train robberies, outstanding of which was the one 5 miles east of Council Bluffs, where he and his men derailed the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific Express. The cars telescoped. The engineer was instantly killed. 12 passengers were seriously injured. And Jesse and his men robbed them all. There are many other mayhems too numerous to mention, except that they averaged 1.37 corpses per exploit. One act of kindness must be noted, however. Mr. Avery Thompson, hurt grievously by a runaway horse in the streets of Abilene, pleaded to be put out of his misery. From 50 paces, Jesse obliged. His act of mercy was applauded by all around. It was then this half-kind, half-renegade person that the brothers Ford were going to kill. Charlie and Robert went home, lit the kerosene lamp, and waited. They didn't have to wait too long.
Hi, Jesse. Come on in.
It was a Saturday night when Jesse walked through that doorway in Ray County, and Sunday was his favorite day because he could sleep late.
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. Tomorrow night, if you're in the mood for still more adventure listening, don't miss 21st Precinct, the program that probes the inner workings of the world's largest police force. 21st Precinct shows you policemen as the human beings they are, exposes their tough grinds, their dangerous careers. Remember, it's Tuesday nights on most of these same stations, presented by CBS Radio. And now, once again, Thomas Highland and the second act of Crime Classics, and his report to you on The Death of a Picture Hanger. The night Jesse James walked into the Ford home, he was carrying a .45 Colt on one hip, .45 Smith Wesson on the other, and a .44 Derringer in his waistcoat, and a Winchester rifle hung limply from his left hand. Armed in this manner was standard operating procedure for Jesse when he walked into homes, a procedure which varied only some years before when he courted. At this time of romance, he did not wear the Derringer. It should be remarked, however, that the Winchester was kept by his feet, like a faithful old dog. All of which adds up to the fact that all of the people who tried before this Saturday night to kill Jesse were long dead. And the Ford boys, Robert and Charlie, were well aware of this fact. But Robert wanted to be a hero, and Charlie wanted $10,000. So they were very hospitable.
Sit in the rocker, Jess. Want some whiskey? Bob. Heard you been in Jefferson City, Jess.
Here you are, Jess. You must be sleepy, Jess.
What's the matter with you, Bob? You don't have to tell Jess when he's sleepy. Jess knows when he's sleepy.
I just don't want to talk important things to him, that's all. Not when his head's nodding.
Simmer down, Bob.
All right, Jess, I'll tell you. We're tired of lazing around. Me and Charlie have been doing nothing, just waiting for you to say go. When are you going to say go, Jess?
Kid's anxious, Jess. Just like kids.
You're tired, that's all.
Yeah. Been on my back like this for a week, Jess. Worrisome, ain't he?
Listen, Jess, we figured something.
A train, Jess.
Trains are easy.
You hear what he said? You hear what he said, Charlie? Trains are easy.
Kid.
The Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific out of Kansas City. It makes a stop at Winston, Jess.
At Cameron, too.
Here's your drink, Jess. We gonna do it to the train, Jess? Yahoo!
Need some sleep. Bob, fix Jess that place in the barn.
Sure. Sure, Will.
So Bob went out to the barn, fluffed up some straw, and made a bed for Jesse to sleep in. This was considered an act of compassion of the time, barn owners to wayfarers. But in this instance, it was known as a tactic. Get Jesse on his back in the barn with maybe his guns off. Get him while he's sleeping. So consider now what we have here. Jesse James bedded down for the night and his two would-be assassins as guardian angels. In the trade, this is known as a precarious position. So switch now from prone Jesse to outside the barn. Nearly midnight in Missouri, and a mist from the river threading between Charlie Ford and Bob.
When are we going to kill Jess?
Try killing him from now on.
You think he's sleeping?
Where'd you bed him down?
Under that window.
Well, let's go peek, see if he's sleeping.
What you think?
He's lying there, all right.
Eyes closed.
Can't tell. I sure tell this some.
What?
Look at that pool of moon. Wait a minute, I'll get out of your way. See?
He's holding a gun in each hand.
He's a light sleeper.
When he sleeps.
We don't even know he's sleeping.
Charlie.
Hmm?
Shoot him. Kill him.
You want to be the hero, younger brother. You do.
Supposing I miss?
I'll shoot you just where you're standing if you miss. Because if you miss, you wake Jess. And I'll just explain to Jess that I killed you to save his life. That way he's saving mine.
If we were sure he's sleeping, be no trouble at all.
You make sure.
If some kind of animal or something walked by him soft, that'd be a way. Hey, you wait here a minute. Come here, you little old dog. That's right. You're too old to live anyhow. Little dog's too old to live anyhow, Charlie. Step aside a minute. I'll push him through this chink in the wall. Critter'd run into the barn past Jess, and we'll find out for sure.
It's shattering like a woman, Bob. Just do it.
Bob and Charlie huddled together that night, and in the morning they flashed their nicest, sleepiest grins when they awoke to find Jesse James standing over them.
I shot me this critter last night. Who's going to cook me my breakfast?
The boys tumbled out of bed and vied who would be first at the skillet. Bob won, and Charlie put the kettle on. It was late, and it was Sunday, so they had brunch. Toward its end, as a gesture of carefree camaraderie, Jesse heaved the Ford's best china against the wall.
Breaking them against the wall's easy, Jess. Why don't you throw them up in the air and shoot them?
You crazy, Bob. What'd you tell him to do that for?
Use up all his bullets, and then we...
Watch it, Jess!
Ain't gonna hit you, Bob. Just seeing how close I can come.
In the name of heaven, Jess!
Cut it out, Jesse. You got the kid almost crying.
Stand still. See how you like it, Charlie. See if I can fan in your ear without drawing blood. Now let's go do it to a train.
Which meant riding down to Winston, which meant for the Ford boys a constant vigilance for the moment when Jesse would turn his back, would ride ahead of them a few paces. Anything so that they could have an irretrievable advantage. Historians make category of this event as the ride to Winston with the Fords up front. Jesse just didn't trust anybody to ride in back of him, except his mom, but then she was only comfortable on very slow horses. So down to Winston they rode, and at 9:30 p.m. on Monday night, they boarded the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific train. As soon as the train started, they dressed themselves in white linen dusters. They wore red handkerchiefs over their faces, and they waited in the vestibule for the conductor. 15 minutes later, Jesse James and the Fords left behind them two corpses, a wounded engineer, and an empty duck cage, the boys having released a dozen ducks from the express car. They took with them $8,000 in cash and convertible mementos. The boys jumped off the train at a point where they had tethered their horses. Then they rode south. They rode to St. Joseph, Missouri. They rode to the home of Jesse James, with Jesse riding behind.
Wait out here, boys. Anne. Annie.
That you, Jess?
Sure.
I'm in the kitchen. Hello, Jess.
Don't you kiss me now, Ann. You wait till I wash off this road dust.
I don't mind.
You're too pretty to get mussed up.
Oh, Jess.
What you got there, Ann?
I was in Isaac's today to see about some harness. He gave me this calendar. He said, you put this up in a nice place, Mrs. Howard.
Everybody in town calls you Mrs. Howard, don't they, Ann?
They call us the Happy Howards. They ask what you do, I say a traveling man. You been traveling, Jess?
I brought your watch, Mrs. Howard. Yeah.
Why, Mr. Howard, Porcelain and gold. Just what I wanted. Now you go away and wash so I can kiss you. What you doing to that calendar, Jess?
Pretty picture of a horse, Ann. Tear off the calendar part. It'll look nice in the parlor. Nail it up in the parlor, Ann.
Some tacks and a hammer in the cabinet.
Brought the Ford boys with me, Ann.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. I'll have the boys come in. You make us something to eat.
I'll fetch you some water first for washing.
Come on in, boys. You boys like this picture?
Right good picture of a horse.
What are you going to do with it, Jess?
Figured to hang it here somewheres.
I wouldn't want me a picture of no horse in the parlor.
You just ain't got no eye.
No, he ain't. Yeah, I think hanging a picture like that's real good. Where are you going to hang it, Jess?
Here, I guess.
That's too low to hang a picture.
Yeah.
Higher, huh?
I had me that picture, and I was going to hang it. I'd hang it higher.
Maybe you're right. Pleasant to be home.
How's your missus?
Pleasant to be home. Man don't have to carry around all these guns weighing heavy around his middle. Feels mighty fine.
I said, how's your missus, Jess?
Getting water. Gonna cook us something. Get off that chair, Bob.
What for?
You stupid. I said I was gonna hang me this picture.
All right.
Pretty picture.
Bob.
All right. All right, Charlotte.
You shot the back of Jesse's head off, Bob.
That make me a hero, don't it?
Sure does.
Shooting Mr. Howard, alias Jesse James, in the back was a very heroic deed. So heroic that a song was written about it. The refrain goes, "And the dirty little coward, he shot Mr. Howard and laid Jesse James in his grave."
The Death of a Picture Hanger, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is transcribed and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Clayton Post was heard as Jess, Paul Fries as Charlie, and Sam Edwards as Bob. Featured in the cast were Joseph Kearns, Charlotte Lawrence, Paula Winslow, and Joseph Granby. Roy Rowan speaking.
Hear The American Way, starring Horace Hite, Thursday nights on the CBS Radio Network. From July of 1953, it's been Lou Merrill starring in crime classics with The Death of a Picture Hanger, Jesse James. That's all the time we have for today, but be with us again next week at this very same time and invite a friend to listen and enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
Preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions. All rights reserved. KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.